This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. The song Uptown Funk by Mark Ronson was one of the biggest hits of the year. Today, we hear from Ronson as we continue our series of some of our favorite interviews of the year. Later, we'll feature my interview with Aziz Ansari and Alan Yang, co-creators of the Netflix comedy series Master of None. Uptown Funk is featured on Mark Ronson's album Uptown Special, but the lead vocal is by Bruno Mars, who co-wrote the song. Ronson is musician, producer, and DJ. He's put out 4 albums under his own name, and they all feature other artists singing the songs he co-wrote and produced. Ronson's production work on the Amy Winehouse album, Back to Black, helped to make international hits out of her songs Rehab and You Know I'm No Good. Mark Ronson grew up in the music world. His stepfather is Mick Jones, the co-founder of the band Foreigner. He was born in London, but his family moved to New York when he was 8. He's now a much sought-after producer and has done recordings with Adele, Paul McCartney, Ghostface Killah, and Duran Duran. I spoke with Ronson in April, just after Uptown Funk ended its 14-week run at the top of the Billboard Hot 100.
This shit, that ice cold Michelle, fight for that white gold. This one for them hood girls, them good girls, straight masterpieces. Stylin', wildin', living it up in the city. Got Chucks on with Saint Laurent, gotta kiss myself, I'm so pretty. I'm too hot. Call the police and the fireman, I'm too hot. Make a dragon wanna retire, man, I'm too hot. Say my name, you know who I am, I'm too hot. And my band bought that money, break it down. Girls hit you, hallelujah. Girls hit you, hallelujah. Girls hit you, hallelujah. Cause Uptown Funk don't give it to you.
Cause Uptown Funk don't give it to you.
Cause Uptown Funk don't give it to you.
Saturday night and we in the spot.
Don't believe me, just watch.
That's Bruno Mars' Uptown Funk, produced by my guest, Mark Ronson. Mark Ronson, welcome to Fresh Air. What a great track.
Thank you.
You've said that that started as a jam, but it's so heavy with hooks, and it's so kind of produced and filled with references to other recordings, so it seems so not like a jam.
I think that where it came from and the initial birth of it, it did come out of a jam at Bruno's studio. You know, he was playing drums, and Jeff Basker, who co-produced the record with us, is on synths, and I was playing bass. And I think that that spirit, or at least the raucousness of maybe that, is in there. And then, yeah, like along the way, you fine-tune it because you're thinking like, okay, we need to now turn this into a song. And then also when you're doing something that doesn't sound like anything else on the radio at the time, you almost need to like ironclad it to make sure it gets through. You know, you have to put these hooks in it. You know, you got to make sure you got all that ear candy in it to get it through the gate.
What does it mean to be a producer? I think a lot of people don't really know. And what does it mean for you to be a... I mean, like, you're a real hands-on producer, so what does it mean when you're producing something?
I think, you know, for me, whatever I need to slot into to make that music the best it can be or help the artist or whoever I'm working with achieve whatever vision they have in their head for a song. So sometimes if I'm working with a rapper like Ghostface Killah or Nas, producing usually means in hip-hop that you make the music, you make the beat, and you give it to them and they write the rhymes. Then, you know, the other more traditional role of the producer in like the kind of Quincy Jones sense is kind of part arranger. So you're coming up with it, like these, you hear these songs that are quite bare bones and you dream up what's the band doing, what's the rhythm section doing, what's the guitars, strings, pianos, that sort of thing. It's almost like a little toolbox. You just pick up a little bit of whatever the ones you think are appropriate and you try and, you know, combine them, and then you bring in other people that are great for the things that you're not so good at. So when I was working with Amy Winehouse on Back to Black, you know, she had all these beautiful songs incredibly well written, and just her on the acoustic nylon string guitar, and she would play them for me, and then I would kind of drum up my idea of what I thought, make a demo with what I thought the drum should be doing, the guitar is like quite a crude demo, and then I'd play it for her, and if she liked it, we'd run with it, and then eventually we got the Dap Kings in to record, and that was that.
Well, you mentioned Amy Winehouse, so let's talk about the huge hit album that you had with her, Back to Black. I know you produced most but not all the tracks on that album. You produced You Know I'm No Good, right?
Yeah.
Good. Let's hear that one. And I'm choosing that because it's a great recording, and also the horns stand out so well on it, and that was all you're doing, getting the Dap Kings to perform with her. So why don't we hear that, and then we'll talk about it. So this is the late Amy Winehouse. The song is You Know I'm No Good, and it's from her album Back to Black, which was largely produced by my guest Mark Ronson. Amy Winehouse, her song You Know I'm No Good. That track was produced by my guest Mark Ronson, who produced most of that album Back to Black, which was a huge hit. So the way you were describing it, it sounds like she played you maybe a demo of the song. What did you hear in your mind, and how did you put that together for what became the final recording?
Well, on this song, this is really one of the best examples of one of the songs that the Dap Kings, you know, the musicians who played on this stuff, really brought to life. Because of the chords and the way Amy had played the song, I had always thought of it almost as like a kind of Latin, like samba, what is it? But it was originally like doom. And that's how I had the demo. And I kind of got in and I just told the band, I was like, here's my arrangement, but I'm not really feeling it. So why don't you guys just like hit on a groove or how you would play this chord chart? And Homer and Nick, the drummer and the bass player from the Dap Kings, one of the most incredible rhythm sections, probably the most incredible rhythm section I've ever worked with, just came up with that doom, and that it just instantly changed the song. And then Dave Guy and the Neil came up with that horn line, and that was when I really discovered the magic of the Dap Kings, and how, you know, very much like the Wrecking Crew in LA and, you know, the Funk Brothers, like, are a special group of musicians that really just bring you something that nobody else does.
I think the baritone saxophone works so well because Amy Winehouse has such a deep voice. To have an instrument that's going to be way beneath her, it just even adds more deepness to the recording.
I agree. You know, that was the first time that I probably ever used a baritone sax, and it's certainly the texture that, you know, it's all over the record because it's a nice compliment to her tone.
So how had you first heard the Dap Kings? You must have heard them before deciding to bring them on for this album.
Yeah, I had started to use Dave Guy, the trumpet player, was an incredible musician. He came into the studio one day and they had just cut a cover of Sign, Seal, Deliver for something with Sharon Jones. And I just was blown away by how they got that sonic. I mean, it was just so much the real deal. And at the time, Amy and I was working on demos for Back to Black, and I was probably using, you know, like whatever computer trick I could, that they have plugins, you know, for your computer that make things sound old or whatever it is. And I played Amy this recording of Sharon Jones, and I said, like, how good is this? We should get these guys to play these demos. She's like, yeah, yeah. She would say, like, it's the Nuts. If she thought something was really good, it was the Nuts. So she said it was the Nuts, and when we got the whole band, not just the horn section.
So how did you get to work with Amy Winehouse? How did she approach you? Were you matched up by someone else?
Basically, there's a good friend of mine who works at EMI Publishing, a publishing company. He had asked me, he was like, you know, do you know this girl, Amy Winehouse? She's in New York for a day. She's kind of meeting people to maybe work with on a second album. And I remember that about 3 years before that, her first record had come out. And I just remember really liking this one song off it called In My Bed and being a little bit enamored, this young kind of Jewish girl from North London. You know, I have the same thing from a Jewish family from North London, with this incredible voice. And so I said, yeah, I'll meet her. And, you know, to be honest, I wasn't like I was some big shot. Like at that point, you know, I was meeting with anybody that might want to work on music, you know, because you never know where chemistry is going to come or your break or whatever it is. So she came to my studio one day, and I was on Mercer Street, Mercer and Canal in downtown New York, and we hung out, talked about music. You know, she was so magnetic, and I guess her energy, like, I just instantly liked her, and I wanted to impress her, basically. Like, I wanted to have a piece of music that would make her be like, wow, I want to work with this guy, you know, for lack of a better words. And so I said, well, why don't you go home back to the hotel, and I'll work on something tonight and see, you know, come back tomorrow and I'll play you a little piece of music and see if you're into it. So she had played me all this stuff in the Shangri-Las, and I was all this 60s girl group pop that she was into, and I was kind of inspired. And she came back, and I had the next morning the piano chords for Back to Black and the kind of little skeleton beat with the tambourine, and I just put a bunch of cheap reverb on it because I thought, like, that's what that sound was supposed to be like. And she really dug it, and that's how we ended up she ended up staying in New York another week, so we worked on, you know, the rest of the songs that she had.
Was it odd for you when she had the hit of Rehab, knowing that she really did have drug and alcohol problems, that Rehab really was an issue in her life?
I guess because at the point that I met her, she was pretty much sober and, you know, the most together she had been maybe like in years. So it was strange because everyone was telling me these stories like, you know, oh, you're working with Amy Winehouse, oh, good luck. Like, I heard she's been working on this record for 3 years or blah, blah, blah. And I just had no idea what everyone was talking about, because she came into New York, she had these songs, she seemed to be creatively on fire. She wrote Back to Black and Rehab while we were there in the studio, and, like, you know, kind of a matter of hours. And so she was good. So when she was telling me the story about Rehab, we were actually walking down the street, and she was saying, you know, there was this time, like, a couple of years ago, and I was in this dark place, and my family came over and some friends, and they tried to make me go to rehab, and I was like, psh, no, no, no. And she put up her hand, and I just thought, like, that's such a catchy kind of turn of phrase, and should we go back and just maybe, do you want to try and write a song with that? Because it just instantly sounded like a hook to me. So it very much sounded like something that had happened in her life and she had kind of moved past. So there was never any kind of weird, like, yes, if she had terrible problems and was drinking every day in the studio, there's no way I would have said, like, oh, that's a great idea for a song. But because it felt like something that she had kind of, you know, just overcome, it didn't seem like a bad idea.
Why don't we hear a little bit of that? And this is Amy Winehouse, and the track is Rehab. It's produced by my guest Mark Ronson.
They tried to make me go to rehab, I said no, no, no. Yes, I've been black, but when I come back, no, no, no. I ain't got the time, and if my daddy thinks I'm fine, they tried to make me go to rehab.
Yeah.
So, Mark, you come from a really musical family. Your stepfather is Mick Jones, who is the guitarist in the band Foreigner and wrote one of their biggest hits, I Want to Know What Love Is. So let's just hear a few seconds of that song to refresh people's memory.
In my life, there's been heartache and pain. I don't know if I can face it again. Can't stop now. I've traveled so far to change this lonely life. I want to know what love is.
So that's Foreigner, a song written by my guest Mark Ronson's stepfather, Mick Jones. So how old were you when that song was released?
I think that was about maybe 10 years old. You know, that's he met my mom when I was about 7, and then we moved to New York. We lived in London at the time when she got married to him, and then he wrote that song for her. So it's kind of amazing. I mean, my wife is always like, I don't write lyrics, so I can like really technically write a song for anyone. I could write a very nice instrumental. So she always sort of gives me a hard time because it's just such a ridiculously impossible standard to live up to that your stepdad wrote that song for your mom. But yeah.
You can understand how incomprehensible it is to me to have parents where your stepfather wrote a song for your mother that becomes this like huge international hit. I can't grasp what that would be like. Did you like the track when you were 10?
Yeah, I think I did. I loved it then. I think I love it now. You know, I really love something about being around the recording studios. You know, like those days in the 80s, they'd be like in the studio till 4, 5, 6 in the morning working on these songs. And sometimes I'd be allowed to be hanging out in the studio, which I just love, kind of like being in the room with these big recording desks with all these like buttons and knobs and watching the guys use them. Or sometimes he'd come home, you know, while I was getting up to go to school in the morning, he'd be coming home at the same time, and he'd play me like the most recent mix of the song from the studio and ask for my input. And I don't remember any of this happened, but he'd always tell me that I'd be like, you know, my little English schoolboy voice, like, well, I remember that the bass was turned up slightly more on the mix from last week, and I thought that was good, or whatever. Like, there were some little things in there that he said that he came to, like, really enjoy my opinion, or at least, like, my little comments on the song. So I was kind of destined to probably be a studio rat.
What has been the impact for you on your life and your career of having a really big hit again, Uptown Funk?
You know, it's weird. It hasn't really changed my life in any kind of way that I can measure. I mean, it's obviously such a insanely amazing thing. You know, none of my other records I've ever had before even broke into the top 100. You know, like there's songs like Valerie and Bang 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 that I was so proud of. And, you know, the level of success that they had, if they were little cult hits, meant that, you know, I could sell out Webster Hall or Williamsburg Music Hall or the El Rey Theater in L.A. Like, that was having made it to me. So the thought of having a number one song in my own career, like, never even registered. And music is kind of it's like a finicky industry to be in, of course. Like, tastes change. You're hot one minute, you're not. You know, I've been through it quite a few times, like, on both sides of it. And I guess the best thing about having a successful record like this is, like, I know I'm at least good for another 5 years, like, before everyone starts to, like, all the haters start to come out again. And that's really what it is. It's like every time you have one of these, you're sort of, your lease is renewed another 5 years. And that's kind of great for me because that's all I really want to be doing still at this point, like, just making records and getting to work with, like, artists that I think are exciting.
Well, Mark Ronson, it's been great to talk with you. Thank you so much and congratulations.
Thank you for having me. Thank you.
My interview with Mark Ronson was recorded in April. His single, Uptown Funk, featuring Bruno Mars, was one of this year's biggest hits.